I call this meeting to order. Please stand for the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May we have the roll call?
Councilmember Deedy?
Here.
Councilmember Oglesby?
Here.
Councilmember Edelman?
Here.
Councilmember Stout?
Here.
Councilmember Wisnowski?
Here.
Councilmember Nelson?
He has been excused.
Councilmember Page?
Here.
We have to talk into the microphone. So I want to remind everybody to talk into the microphone, and so raise your hand when you want to speak or ask a question, and somebody will pass you a microphone. So we're going to go ahead and get started, and we're going to let Seth or May introduce Ashley Emery.
All right. Thank you for coming tonight. We have used Ashley Emery of Peninsula Financial Consulting to prepare models for our financial rate studies for water, sewer, and storm. He began doing that in 2013, and we've had him back again to do other rate increases. Our plan is to have him review these every couple of years, come back and let us know how we're doing, because sometimes what you thought was going to happen didn't. But he'll go over tonight all the numbers we put together, Seth and I, and Mr. Emery have been working for a couple of months now, pulling all the numbers together, making sure we understood every number and all the growth and inflation and all the different rates and everything. And so he's got a nice presentation ready tonight, and then we'll get comments and questions from you, and hopefully it'll be a good presentation. You'll learn a lot. So, Ashley.
It's a little imposing, but all right. So, as May mentioned, I was here a while ago, and we took care of a storm. But we're going to take a look and just confirm tonight. We're going to go through all three utilities. The sewer is the only one we're proposing any action for, you guys to dig into. The water and storm, the storm with the last look is still doing okay. And the water looks like it's going to hang on, but has undergone a low blow. It's taken a big hit that's changed its future, too. So we want to at least show you the impact of that. The big thing that I hope you take away is one, what we're here to do is allow you to adjust and look at the sewer and see just exactly what you want to do. It's a judgment decision. The other thing I hope to really demonstrate to you guys is how you're leveraging growth to keep the rates as low as possible. You're doing a good job at that. You always have. And I think it looks like all three funds are not going to be as reliant on growth as the last full time we sat this down, which was 5 or 6 years ago. Then you were really, it was like, oh boy, if this growth, we're in trouble. We're past that kind of critical phase, I think, financially. So just a little bit more robust, and I think that's really speaks well for the city in the future. So we're going to concentrate on the sewer, and then hopefully we'll have a few minutes and we can just clue you in and show you what's going on in the water and storm funds as well. And just any questions, just yell. Let me know. Okay, so as May mentioned, what we've done is just model this to provide the flexibility to be able to allow you to look at and adjust numbers. These are the big ticket forecast variables that we've used. Cost of living increases, 2 to 3%. This is no big deal. It's just expected. The big one for you is growth, and we settled in at, I think, a very conservative approach of The model assumes 125 new connections in 2020 and then 100 a year for the next 5 years. So it's relatively, there's no pie in the sky there. I think that you've got hundreds on the book right now. But that's what we used as our, okay, that's what we can hopefully rely on. We did throw in a quarter of a new employee to each of the funds in 2022 and 25. You just can't grow without. But that's not a, it's a minor hit. It's not a big.
So is that a quarter new employee every year between 22?
No.
That's just one quarter. Because then I see,
it's,
you know,
it's split between all the funds.
Right.
That assumes over the next 6 years.
We're going to get a full one person or two
people over the entire.
Okay. Thank you.
Administrative and engineering functions for those funds.
Okay.
The other thing that I'm going to hammer on, because this is real important for you guys, is this is not a capital. This is really an operational look at rates. Mm-hmm. Capital is largely absent from this. And it's a trap that I've seen so many clients get into. You're the only one, though, that's undergoing it just because your growth spurt is happening at this point. Most growth spurts happen at the start. At least from a water and sewer utility standpoint, in the relative recent history of the 60s and 70s. And therefore, the problem that clients always run into is when developers create these facilities, you're always lagging behind in manpower and repair costs for those facilities. And so many times, you can forget about it so easily. They're going to last for 60, 70, 100 years. But you are a small community, and you're tied with water capacity issues with a third party and the sewer with a third party for all treatment. And that really puts you in a peculiar spot because you only have a limited portion of the revenue associated with a much larger operation. It's just, you know, half of your operations in King County. This is going to put long-term capital needs at a premium for you. You need to plan, and you need to plan a long time in advance. Otherwise, you're going to get abnormally hit hard when they do come to roost. And they will. They will. But that's a long-term issue, and we'll talk about that when we get through the, I won't say fun stuff, but. So the sewer utility, and this is true for all three of the utilities, as May mentioned, staff, and we've been working for a couple of months on going through the numbers and making sure that the numbers look reasonable from a standpoint of using them to forecast into the future. So, for example, grants, which are very problematic, you don't want to rely on those. Not that you have a bunch of those, but the city does very well on grants, and you guys do very well on that. So that's how we started with. That's how we set that initial budget. And then we've tied certain revenues and expenses to certain factors, where we talked about the cost of inflation, COLAs, and so forth. Other factors are tied to growth. Your revenue is tied to growth. Your electrical costs, your postage costs are tied to growth. And that's, as we discussed, that's the 125, and then that should be 100, not 10. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that. You also have, and on the sewer, remember, you're not getting the connection charge with development in the planned areas. You do get it with infill growth, and you are getting some of that, so we just threw in a factor so that some of the growth is as a lease, and that works out to 5 or 6 a year of those 100 is coming in. You're going to get the connection charge off of the new employee, and then very little capital costs, and thank God, zero debt. Sewer utility doesn't have any debt, and that's another that ties back with that discussion about the long term, the fact that you're getting capital in with into the system that's just being donated. the fact that you have zero debt here is thank God. Debt, traditionally debt is used for capacity related issues, not for transmission, collection, and distribution, unless they're really large projects. So it's commendable. You guys are sitting here with no debt on the sewer, and anything you can do to not do that, to not issue debt, is going to
be good.
Good stuff. Yes. Okay, so at this point, we're going to switch over to, and there's no nice way to do this. It'd be nice if the... Come on, you little devil. Looks like it's getting a shadow or something. Only in some parts.
So in the packet, so you have that's on page 5 is that page he's going to work on.
Yeah.
I can see it on the big screen. Yeah. See, it's up in the upper right corner.
Yep. Oh, I'm not going to worry about it. I can see it here. Okay, so this is the duplicate of the forecast we just left in the presentation. This is your sewer fund. From a modeling standpoint, we've got your individual rows of revenues, expenses, and each one of those is that's what's carried forth. It's all summarized up here. This is your basically your checking account. This is your day-to-day, and then this is your capital. So from an operational standpoint, and up here we're just keeping track of your rates. That's your city rate and then the King County rate, and then the total. So year by year, those are total operating revenues coming in. Those are our total O&M. And then you've actually got a revenue payment for a loan fund that you made to the police department, I believe, for a couple of years. So that's actually showing as a positive. That's not a debt. And so that's we're showing the expected next year is even with growth, you're going to come out short in the sewer revenue fund. Now, down below, this is where these are all your cash reserves. We throw in, that's the infill connection charge from 5 or 6 of those 125. You do have a grant fund or developer portion coming in for part of the capital. You've got a few capital expenses that we've listed out. And then you see we've got no more capital past that point. But the net effect is, the important thing here is, that's my starting balance of cash, and that's where I'm ending. And as you can see, what we're doing is, year by year, we're just transferring money into the operational fund to offset the loss. Now, this, as I said, this is with growth. Without growth, she's bad. There's no escaping that. There's nothing unusual going on other than you started from a hole, and this is going to get worse without correction. And the growth, yes, it is important. As you can see, you watch your operating revenues there. If we actually got the right button, sorry about that. It's 125, not 225. So that's about half the, we make up about half that difference just in the first year of growth. We make up about half of what we're going to lose just by the growth alone expected next year.
New
customers, the revenue coming from...
We bill the new houses sold, but we also bill the developer as soon as they have get to the point where they have connections to water, they have sewer and stormwater. We start billing even the developer, so that revenue starts coming in, and there's quite a number of permits out there in that state right now.
We bill the developer before they sell the houses, so once they hook up to utilities, we continue to bill them until they sell the house.
Except for the next year, the 125.
Yeah.
So that does a lot towards correcting things. That gives buys us a couple more years.
But this is no rate increase.
Exactly. This is doing nothing. This is the worst case scenario, even with growth. And I mean, heck, it is a policy decision. You could. If this growth were double this, we could get back to probably about scratch here. But can you bank on that? So rate adjustments are really, and you know, you just it's so hard to build capital reserves. You really just want to hold on to them as much as possible. So we're looking at taking corrective action. When it comes to the multiplier effect of years, the more you do sooner, actually the lower the rate ends up at the end of 5 years. So if we did equal amounts over 5 years to balance the books in 6 years, as opposed to doing it all in 1 year, and I'm not saying to do it either way, I'm just saying there's probably about a 10% difference in the actual ending because you're just getting so much more bang for the buck. You're going to continue. If you did a little bit every year, you're still going to lose some money this year. So that multiplier effect is significant, but it's of more importance is your customer base and how they think of the utility and your stewardship. And so nobody's recommending that you do, you know, a 40% increase in year one. But that's what we're here to do is adjust this and see how you would like to come up. We looked at a couple of different looks. One was...
Could I ask a question while you're...
Yes.
...digging through? What is a reasonable, and maybe this question for Mayor, both of you, what's a reasonable amount of money that we should aim for having in our fund?
Best practice for utility funds is you have 3 months or... about 15% in your utility funds. Well, you take your expenditures up there and do a percentage, the percentage of that. And I have it in my budget document.
You're above that, and she is. May knows her job. She's good at it. But that is actually one of the most complex questions there are, because there's a difference between operational and long-term capital. The rule of thumb for long-term capital is, you know, according to the state, is look at your biggest at-risk facility that if it were to go down, you'd have to replace. Well, that's not, I mean, your treatment plan. You don't have a treatment plan. But if you had a treatment plan, are you going to worry about having $20 million in the bank? No. It's also impacted by the state of your, you know, where you are out in the life cycle. It's a relatively, all the stuff going in is new. So that's new stuff you don't have to worry about for so long. Of course, every year that you don't do anything about it, then you're increasing how much the per year you're going to have to jump it up, which is that long-term replacement. All those are factored in to what your target should be. From a capital standpoint for you, since the sewer, you don't have treatment facilities. Having $400,000 or $500,000, and that our $400,000 includes operational as well as what you have in the bank. And May needs a couple hundred thousand. That 15%, she needs $250,000 for operational needs, which means you got about $100,000 to $150,000 in capital reserves. That number really for you should be $400,000 or $500,000. More importantly, what we want to see is a trend line. The rule of thumb for long term is about 1.5% of your total asset value, which for you guys, we haven't figured out that number, but an alternative way to look at it is, boy, I should be collecting 2 or 3% off of my revenues, kind of a thing. So, you know, we'd like to see a steady $30,000 to $40,000 going in for immediate capital needs, but for that long term kind of a thing. And that trend is the important thing. It's because this is a 40-year, 50-year kind of a solution, and so it's more about going in the right direction, and that's all dictated by two things: your operational, we're not draining it away, we're contributing a little bit, and just as importantly, are we taking care of the short-term capital that we know we're going to have to pay for? And part of that payment, it depends. You know, we're going to be looking at that. The staff will be looking at that in the near future.
Yeah, we have a CIP update.
Because if you, for example, a simple example, if you have a large ticket item, and it wouldn't take much to where you had to debt finance in the sewer, that's usually a 20-year amortization of those capital costs. Usually that asset, if it's a pipe, it's going to last 7,500 years. So you're actually like 4 or 5 times the annual depreciation you'd collect. So just doing a depreciation funding changes. Yeah, your rates have to be there because you have to pay it back. So you set the rates to account for that, you know, do a rate adjustment for that, and all of a sudden your rates now have a nice capitalization built into them. You forced it in. And that changes then what I would be telling you to do over the next 30 years, because I'd say, listen, just make sure that when that debt gets retired that you don't then dwindle that. You start socking away that money, and that'll be a way to do that. So that would change that picture as well. So we'll find that out.
Shoot. Just to clarify, so on page 5 of our packets, this is assuming no rate increase, but it's assuming the growth in it. And then you have a dynamic way of adjusting this. So the current scenario you have, you're just throwing in a 10% rate increase for the next 3 years.
We've got the growth in there, and then what we'd like to see is similar to the, I would recommend strongly similar to the stormwater fund, is building a cost of living in. And it's integral in here. Because you see, without that, we were not, and you see, even when it stops off, we start sucking away, and in a couple of years, we're back to negative again.
Why does that 2.5% stop?
I was just showing you both indications of what, if it was put in as an annual.
Mm-hmm.
And this is no great surprise, because the cost of livings that we were forecasting with are in the 2 to 3% range, and we don't have any growth past 2025. So the only thing that's changing is your O&M is going up by 2 to 3%, and guess what? A rate increase of adjustment of 2.5% basically countermands that.
Okay, so that 2.5% is the cost of living.
Yes.
Okay.
That's my assumption.
And so that's not in the assumptions of page 5.
Right. It is in the sense that we use our cost of living adjusters for inflation and for salaries and benefits are in that 2.5% to 3% range.
And the
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Well, I think something to... I've been on the council for a long time now. We've been through this a few times. We always, in the past, and I think this council probably would be in agreement, that we don't want to deplete our reserves at all. We want to make sure, because there is going to come a time when we're going to have a recession. We just don't know when it's going to happen. And so it's more important to keep those reserves up as much as we can without hitting the public with such a huge increase. And if my memory serves, we've done incremental increases over a few years on some of the funds.
Yes, you've
yeah.
had to.
So we don't hit them with a great big huge hit right off the bat, but over 3 years or so, then the rates go up.
We looked at the whole up front, where we did it all next year and then sunk back. And you can see we're about at that same. You know, we were climbing towards $600,000 on the last one. Mm-hmm. And that's how we're judging, that's how we're making sure we're comparing apples to apples. We're positive in the near future, and our reserves are growing at a progressive amount that's in line with what's going on. And you can see here that in 2025, our rate's 3081.
But we got to remember that and continues that the development is going to continue to grow at the same exact rate. There won't be any slowdown whatsoever. And you know, in the short term, I think you can expect that. But for the long term, that's not a very good expectation. Also, if you were to have to borrow to fund something, you have to have 1.5% more revenue than your expenditure, including your debt. So you have to have a much, much larger amount difference if you borrow money. Right now, just for operation, we're showing about $150,000. Fund balance that we should have just in the sewer operation. And in the past, we were transferring in $100,000 a year out of reserve. Last year, it got up to $135,000 out of that we were short in revenue. What we're trying to do is not transfer out of reserves and keep pulling it down, but to have revenue pay for the expenditures. And this first year, even if we were to do that, we would like to, I would like to see a rate increase that really mitigates that transfer out of the reserves, and so the revenue is beginning to pay for that. In 2013, when we looked at the water fund, we did 3 15% rate increases, one per year. We haven't had to touch the rates since then. It's been, we had the same model, we looked at it, you know, how much do you want to count on growth, how much do you want to count on no recession, but you want to keep it as low as you can. Like last year, we looked at the stormwater. We could have gone to $20 a month, and everybody said, well, why are you going at 19? And I said, we looked at the model, and I don't think we need 19. Let's keep it at 20. Let's not go to 20. Let's keep it at 19. And that's what we adopted. And you'll see that later. Looks like it's okay. So we were trying to look at it. The other thing we have to remember is Metro increases their piece of the rate every other year. And so we want to be mindful this year if we go for a rate increase in 2020, there is no Metro, so it will just be us. The following year, if we bump a bunch of it out to that year, we're going to have Metro rate increase that's automatic built in. There's nothing we can do. So we wanted to do a higher first year to try to do as much as we could to build that out in the future. And he'll go ahead and show you a couple other scenarios.
So as I was just playing around there, that's the difference between the equal and the upfront results in 50 cent less rate in the 2025. So it's nothing to, you know, I would not say, oh, well, that's the end all be all, but it's just an example that everything, as May was saying, the more you do, the quicker you do it, the lower the rate at the end. Another thing, the really important thing to point out is, I didn't want to change my model and screw something up for you guys, but that 10% is so misleading because your rate is a third of the total rate, King County. So you're in practical terms, there it's a 4 or 5% increase, not a 10% increase. From a dollar, from what I'm paying on a monthly basis and what you're going to raise me. Yes. And that's really how it should be looked at from a presentation standpoint.
Do we present the bill that way? Do we spell out in the bill? I haven't looked at my bill lately, apparently. But do we spell out in the bill so folks know that the Metro... Okay. And do we expect, with all the problems that Metro's had, that the next bump is going to be significant because of their lack of disaster recovery and all that kind of stuff?
We had seen some higher rates. They seemed to have it under the control, but now, like you pointed out, they're having more problems. And they had projected out their rates for the next 10 years, I believe, and they were saying like 2.5%. It's probably going to be like 4 or 5%. And they have a bigger dollar amount, so there's a bigger dollar to the citizen. Right now, even a 15% rate increase is $3.22. So it's not a huge amount, because our $21.78 isn't a very large dollar amount.
Yeah, because they got deep regard.
From a modeling standpoint, from a forecasting standpoint, we've tied the cost for treatment along with the revenue that's being generated on their portion of the bill, so it's an offset. So no matter what happens, now what that can't capture is our estimated bill there. We do have King County, their cost growing at 2.5% along with everything else, but what is true is if they all of a sudden did a 10%, then it won't affect your cash reserves because it'll be a wash, but the bill that your customer is going to see is going to go up, but it's King County. But I would just recommend, whenever the discussions are with the public on this, I would present it in terms of a dollar amount and a percentage equivalent to their monthly bill, not my portion of the monthly bill. It's a small point, but it's...
One thing I would recommend is when, in the future, when we're passing on the King County bill, that we also pass on the additional cost to the city of their higher bills, because we pay utility taxes and state taxes on gross revenues. So when we collect their major portion, the 40 or 50 bucks for King County, if theirs goes up $5, we have to pay utility tax on that increase. So if we don't pass on our additional taxes that we have to pay, it actually starts cutting into our revenue. So something to think about on those pass-throughs.
So those taxes are not included in the utility bill that goes out? I don't have sewer.
They're built into our rate structure. Yeah.
So we're here to allow you to manipulate these rates. This is, in all the scenarios we looked at, this is about where we ended up, was in the $30-$31 range at this point. And that bought us, along with doing a cost of living, that brought us to stabilize that fund and build in a little capital capacity in there.
So, Ashley, I think the rate that's in the packet is a 15% the first year, then 10, 5, 2.5. It's on page 7 of our packet. So if you want to put that one up.
That's this one.
Is it 15? Yeah. Oh, I can't see. All right, you're right. 15. Yeah.
15, yeah. 15,
10, and 5, 10 and a half. Yeah. Which are very modest increases, very modest increases. It looks bad at 15, but that's just the percentage.
And then this assumes that we'll have a 15%, 10%, 5% increase, and then build into our structure.
Right.
Which would not be a specified number.
Actually, May and I were talking about it. I think going to a known number as opposed to a 2.62 kind of a thing.
Yeah,
in the past because inflation has gone up and sometimes even negative. I see cities now going to like 3% or 2.5% instead of saying inflation. It's to cover the cost of inflation, but to have a steady percentage, because every year, just like this year, we have inflation in the sewer or in the stormwater fund. That's a 50 cents increase for a 2.7 inflation. So you don't know what it's going to do because you don't know what's going to happen to inflation over time. So I'm seeing cities more saying for inflation we're going to go to 3% or 2.5%, and we're going to try to review it every 2 years. And if all of a sudden we've had faster growth or slower, we'll have to adjust those rates. But we try to adopt a three prong at least to say the first year, the second year, and then thereafter we might want to do a different inflationary amount.
And this growth is based on 225 houses a year?
125 next year and then 100 per year. So it's relatively modest.
Okay. So if, let's say, they continue building at the rate they're doing now, right, it'd be more than that per year.
Right? Maybe a little more. I think we're already at 100 houses.
Yeah, we've sold 100 this year. A little over 100.
How much does the growth affect the numbers? Percentage?
Well, let's take a look.
So if we add growth to that.
I don't know how that one got out at 100. That's a little. Okay, so let's bump it. So you can see here at 2025, we're at 60,000 operating revenue and just short of 600,000 end of year capital. So that gives us 10, 20, about another 100 ERUs all told over those 5 years. We bumped up another 30,000. Their revenue, those are climbing. Another 20 a year.
Where are you seeing the total on the ERU count?
He's putting it in his computer.
Right there, new ERUs.
Oh, okay.
At that point, so that's basically 20 more a year than we were projecting. At that point, over the next 6-7 years, we'd be saying, okay, you are... If I came in and saw the revenues and cash flows at 2025, 2026, I wouldn't do a thing. And I wouldn't do a thing long-term, and I wouldn't be talking to you about long-term capital funding. I'd be smiling and say, good job, guys. You did well. Now, conversely, just as important is what happens if...
It slows down.
So this is back to our there. And this is what I was saying. I think we're a little, my sense is we're a little bit more robust than we were 5-6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we shrink down by that first 10. You can see we're still.
I'm sorry. Can you call out kind of what the numbers are? Because my eyes aren't that good to see what you're suggesting.
Yeah, no problem. So remember, we're going up about 30,000 a year on operating revenues when we reach that additional 10 units that we're putting on.
Okay.
So we just shrunk it the other way, and we're about the same way. We were at 60,000 to the good. We're now back to 30. This is basically a wash.
And this is based on how many houses?
This is our 125, 100, 100, 100, and then we just sunk it back by 10%. So it's 115 next year, 88, 85, so a little bit more than 10 a year. But you can see... We're still, this is within the margin of error, well within the margin of error. We're basically balanced at this. We could probably take one more slight hit, and that is still within the margin of error. We're just not building anything, but we're well within that. And I like that in the sense now we're down to 175. There's a certain robustness to this. In no way, I mean, that would be a major turndown
change in what's going on here if we were to get to this point. But even if it did, there's no emergency going off. We don't like it, but if it turned around the next year or the year after, we'd be okay. That's the important thing.
I think that's the benefit of having the bigger increase the first year. Like you said, you get more bang for your buck. You start to build that in and start curing it for the future. When you add 100 houses, you really only get revenue from 50 because they don't come all in January, and you get revenue from 100 every single month. You get some in January, February, March, and it's averaged out about half that for the amount of a full year revenue that you get.
I think one of the things that we, you know, as we look at this, the bigger picture, right, we need to realize that the percentage numbers might be scary to some people, right? When you say, oh, we're going to bump it up 15, you're going to bump it up 15%? Yeah, but that's only actually $3 a month or something, right? $2 a month or something,
it's a cup of coffee.
Right? Yeah, exactly. It's less than a cup of coffee, right? I mean, it's, yeah. Right, it's.
I'm talking about going $6 over 6 years.
Yeah, yep.
This is not.
That's a cup of coffee.
And remember, you know, our cost of living is 2.5%. So even when we're saying, you know, and that's not the, you know, the 15, like I said, that is skewed because it's a small portion. Mm-hmm. So that 15% is actually only 6 or 7%. And right. Of that 6 or 7%, 2.5% is going to just general inflation.
Yep.
So, I mean, you're really doing – these are not massive wholesale revenue enhancements. These are more really modest adjustments to the
Well, I think we'll need to make sure we get that message out, right? We already get enough complaints that my water bill's too high. Why is, you know, we don't want them showing up with pitchforks and torches because we're going to raise their rate $2 and they think it's 15% of the whole budget. You know, I mean, if the word gets out that 15%, they're going to think it's the 15% of the $70 and not the 15% of the $25, right? And it's a much smaller number. Well, while we always hate to raise rates, right? We've got to keep up with inflation, and we've got to keep up with making the changes we need to make, right? So we need to make sure that the citizens understand, as hard as it is for us to understand all these numbers, it's even harder for them because they're not here seeing this, right? They'll hear it from their neighbor, or they'll see it on Facebook somewhere or something, right? So I think we'll need to make sure that we message it right, maybe something in one of the newsletters or an insert in the bill or something like that, right? So just so they can understand that, you know, it's not as bad as they think.
Yeah, I anticipated you might think that and want to see what it looked like, so I actually prepared a little handout that shows the percentage increase. And the first is an average citizen, and if we went 15% in the monthly, that block that says monthly 2020. That would all add up. But if you compare it to what their rate was for their whole bill, it was $144. It's going to go to $148, and that's with the stormwater and the sewer rate increase. And it's a 2.57% increase in their overall bill. We did that. What is the Lifeline customer going to pay a month, and we also then did it for the Cedarbrook and their individual. And on the second page, we did one for the first is to show on the residential again, but the Diamond Village residentials, how much theirs would be again. It's 2.57. Diamond Square commercial is a little bit different because they're commercial and they pay a little bit different in there, but it's even less than a percent. As is the bakery. So we will try to put this type information out, put it out in a newsletter. So that was the case last time, even though you talk about 15%. That's not a lot of dollars. If you have a very small amount, you're already charging.
So the 2.5% inflation, what is that number based on? I mean, is that just an estimate, or, I mean, where's the statistical?
I've been doing it for 20 years, and 2.5% is the groove. It's over the last 20 years, it hasn't varied much more than that.
Okay. So does it Because to me it would seem like 3% would be more of a reasonable number.
3% is actually a little high, in my opinion. Just very rarely do we hit that. That is, when we're at 3%, other stuff is going on.
Again, if we put a flat percentage in, we can pick the future years. We're mainly like to get a 2- or 3-prong year in something to go forward and then relook at what that inflation number needs to be in the future, because it may go way up or way down, or we may not need it if we have all kinds of growth. You know, I doubt that's going to happen, but it's inflation, like I said. Last year, I believe it was 3. This year, when I looked, it was 2.7. And so it varies. I've seen it go in the negative in my time.
I'm just a little concerned about years coming forward.
The doing, and May's exactly right, the number, you know, even as a professional doing this, I wouldn't say 3% is wrong. I've just seen too many, I work with models too much, and an extra 0.5%, you know, in the 10th, 15th year starts, starts amounting to actual, yes. So I'm always a little bit shy there, but.
I'm also a fan of, if I'm going to deliver bad news, I'd rather deliver bad news once, because they're going to be focused on 15%, 10%, 5%. They're not going to be focused on 2.5 versus 3, and then you don't, you know, it's a longer range adjustment, but it's one that you don't have to do 3 to 5 years from now. And they say, well, wait a minute, you know, 3 to 5 years ago, you just stuck me 15%. Now you're going to increase it again. And I guess that's kind of my only point for making the argument of maybe looking at that inflation part longer term.
Something else that we probably should at least factor in. So there we're at 3.
There you go.
And it's just a marginal.
Can you scroll to the right on that table?
Pretty soon we have $1 million.
But that's continued growth
forever. The 3% is going out. The growth actually just zips.
In the model, you said the growth only goes to 2025.
Yeah, if you'd like to put in a kind of a fill-in number past that point, say another about 10 years of like 20 a year. Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
And I guess that's, I mean, I know we can make an adjustment, you know, any time, right? But if we're making an adjustment that's fairly large now, hopefully I'm speaking loud enough. But if we're making an adjustment now, I guess I'm just thinking, do we really want to keep coming back every few years and upping the percentages, especially if we're implementing an inflationary piece that's going to go on forever? You know.
With that in mind, I got to agree with you. 3% is going to almost eliminate any risk of you running into several years. I mean, it would at best would be a 1 or 2 year gap, and then you'd start doing better, and you would have been doing better in the meantime than CPI anyway.
And
so,
I'm just throwing 3% out there, it could be 2.7, could be 2.8, sure, whatever it is. I'm just feeling like, you know.
Well, the other thing too that we need to be aware of is the development agreement with Oak Point expires in 2025, and so at that point, a new agreement's going to have to be negotiated. So this doesn't mean that growth stops in 2025. You can't tell me they're going to be building 6,000 units in the next 5 years. That probably isn't going to happen. They have to
renew. 5 or 10 year, whatever. They have an option. They have an option.
But it's still.
The council can extend
it. It comes back. They would have, we'd have to renegotiate that contract, and it would come back to the council for approval to extend it, whatever period of time it may be. But, you know, I think it's written right now for like 5 years.
It's written for five.
But, you know, the council can change that if that's what you all deem at that point in time. So.
I did have one question. May, here in your chart, on the second page, it gives an increase of 12 cents per day for the average residential customer and the various other ones. And I was wondering why the Diamond Village is so high, $1.56. The others are 12 cents, 83 cents, and 18 cents per day. And Diamond Village is $1.56.
That the change in that is how changing to give the Lifeline customers and changing how we charge residents. Is that right, Shane? Shane's my expert.
So the Diamond Village, the Diamond Village specifically is looking at a 13-unit account. So it's $1.56 divided by 13. Yeah, because we do bill, I think there's 4 or 5 different accounts they hold, and each one has a different amount of, they're the standalone condos there. And each one is its own full unit that gets billed, but we send out one bill for each section as there's like 4 or 5 meters out there that we track.
Okay, thank you.
Good job.
I thought we were gouging the little houses.
There are a few hearts going to flutter, huh?
I wanted to mention that we're having the work study tonight, and then we've got a public hearing scheduled for December 5th. And then like to have a rate adopted December 19th. But because we have to have lead time for public hearings and lead time for even adoption, I probably need to have some direction to go forward almost tonight, if possible. We'll still have a public hearing. That doesn't mean we can't change along the way, but we'll put some temporary literature and temporary worksheets like this out.
So I want to point out that Ashley's done several of these studies for us before, and when he did the water one and showed today that that fund works very well with the 15, 15, and 15 that we did however many years ago, he's had great success in predicting what it's going to look like in the future and what we should do. So, and has a lot of experience doing this. And if 3% is too much, then we're collecting too much money. And basically, we've gone a lot of years with that water fund increase that we did last time.
And thank you for those nice words. But luckily, it was the growth came through. I'm as happy for you guys as can be, and thank God, because when you see the water fund, the capacity charge, I mean, the fact that you are going to take that in stride is miraculous, absolutely, and it's the growth, and well, the combination of the growth and the fact that we didn't rely 100% on the growth. There was a modest approach. We took the, remember, if you, that time we did a low, moderate, and then high growth scenario, and we went with the moderate. And so we kind of, we're trying the best we could to get best, the best of both worlds. And I think we probably could have done with a little less, considering the growth did come through. But if we had, you would have been, we would have been behind the eight ball right now. Yeah. So you are getting the benefits of the good action that you took last time, and the fact that the growth did come in, and it came in as better than expected, but that just allowed you to overcome an eventuality that nobody knew it was out there. And my God, that was a rock. So it was a boulder. So, wow.
So Councilmember Oglesby here, just curious, with your history with our city and knowing what we've been through and what we're going through in the future, and your expertise on these wonderful diagrams, what would you suggest to us? What would you be your dream numbers up there if to give us the best outcome in the future?
Page seven, I think
you're playing it. Like I said, I like
15, 10, 5.
Anything that gets us to this point. So, and that's why we give you this power.
Right.
I've got no problem. I like this 15, 10, 5 approach. It's got a, it's showing a decrease in the increase, which is a nice kind of a little.
And in the future, like Councilmember Page said, you know, if we did up to 3% in 2023, can we ever go back down? Sure.
Each
year. I mean, that's always
nice
to know that.
You could elect not to adopt it that year.
Anytime we want.
It's okay. An automatic, but you could countermand that and say, don't adopt it this year. Mm. But it would take action to do that.
Okay.
So it gives you a...
I wanted to mention that we are going to be updating the capital plan in the spring. One of the things that I think will be affecting sewers, there's various things we need to continue to cover costs of. Updating the public works facilities. So even though it's not really big costs, but they're not shown up here. So the 3%, even if it's higher than inflation, and remembering Ashley's comments at the beginning, that we at some point need to start thinking about setting aside funds for long term. So maybe it is higher than inflation, but there still is that the capital side of things. Now, one of the things, the sewers were built in the early to mid-80s. So as Ashley was saying, a lot of those facilities are still on the young side for how long the sewer lines and manholes will last. But now, over the next 50 years, and at some point, we're going to need to start saving for those bigger replacement costs.
As I said, this is nothing unusual. Is every client, very few clients start early. And, you know, if a lot of the stuff was done in the 80s, look what you saved for that. Nothing. You technically haven't saved anything because you're still a little below where I'd like to see you just from a contingency standpoint in your capital reserves. So you have no slush fund sitting there for the long-term repair replacement, and there's very little costs built into the O&M side. You know, usually on this size of a budget, and part of it's just because you don't have the treatment facilities, but, you know, we don't have a repair replacement item just for ongoing maintenance costs. You know, $40,000-$50,000 in there either. So this is really skimpy on the capital side. And, you know, it's one of those things. You'll see me again in 10 years, and the story will be, well, now we're at 50 years of the life, and we're still. So it's the marginal. It's the 2.5% to 3% kind of a bump. I mean, you do that. City of Puyallup years ago took that approach. They did a cost of living, and then they jumped on top of it. They said, we're doing a long-term repair and replacement, and that was built right in. And like I said, for a 90-year asset, you're looking at about 1.5% is the percentage needed to cover over that kind of a long lifespan. So it's eminently doable. It's just a question of when you start and the magnitude that's going to result in it. It's just like not putting away for your kids' college fund until they're 19. Oh, damn it. I hope they're good at tennis, you know.
I hope they have a good job paying for their
Councilmember Page. So, you know, the reason I brought up the 3% was a couple of reasons. One, I mean, obviously, not to get into politics, but, you know, we have tariffs and things that are probably right now potentially going to bump the trend of inflation. The other reason that I kind of brought that up is that, again, I'd rather, if we're kind of delivering a rate increase, I'd rather do it once. And to the point that somebody else had made, if we don't feel like we need that, we're in a position to give our residents some good news that, hey, instead of 3%, we're going to bump it down because we don't need it. That being said, I think the bigger discussion is the next 3 years, the 15, the 10, and the 5. And I think if we can, as a council, agree on that, I think, you know, the long-range number is just a number.
Yep.
You know?
That's a good synopsis. No matter what we do, we need to make a change in the next 3 years. It has to be. We can't wait past that point. Otherwise, we're going to dip into negatives. So the major correction has to happen over the next 3 years, unless you want a 5-6 year of 5-6%, which is no good either. So that's really what you should concentrate on. It's just a question of getting, you know, it's getting that 25-30% split up into those 3 years, 3 or 4 years, basically. However you'd like that, whatever that you want to. I can run in as many scenarios as you like. You can see it's easy to do. So
as a point of clarification, I mean, what is the desired outcome of this meeting? I mean, I'm new to the council, so. Okay, that's kind of where my question is, so maybe I can defer to the more seasoned.
And older than you.
No,
but the thing is that, and he's also my neighbor. So, what we do in the work studies is we can reach consensus. Everybody can shake their heads up and down. If we want to move forward or have May move forward to get everything ready for the council meetings, but we do not take a vote per se here. So that all happens within the open public meeting of the council meeting. Right, but at that point,
so
we
have to give Mae the opportunity to get her packets together, get the public hearings that are required, because the public does get to have an input.
So when's the public hearing on this? Okay, so that is close. So all the stuff that May has shown you here is based on the population growth and the 15, 10, 5, and 2.5, 2.5, and 2.5. This scenario here is different because you've taken some of the growth out, but you put 3% in. So all of the stuff that we have here now doesn't match this.
As long as the first year is a 15%, it will match hers.
I think the packet information that's gone out for the public hearing included this. And the only thing I heard different is that this 2.5 might be 3.
Well, they changed some of the, didn't you change some of the population numbers?
You mean the growth?
Well, it's not, it doesn't match, page 7, so he didn't put it back.
Oh, if you're talking about with the actual packet as opposed to the...
Yeah, so all I'm saying is, if this is stuff that we've already prepared for the packet, we need to put it back to what this is on page 7. Because otherwise, there's a whole bunch more work that May's going to have to do if we decide to change all those numbers.
So is the only thing changed the 125?
Yeah. Or Shane. We don't know who's doing it.
Do we want to put the 3% in the packet?
We could.
And May directed me to do this because she's a wise woman. She maybe put the codicil in there that, listen, this is just for illustrative purposes. The point of this meeting is to look at alternatives to get to this desired end result.
Right.
This work that May did, in fact, wouldn't change as long as they're 15% because growth's not in this.
And that's only for the next.
And that's no problem. You know,
right.
It's an hour.
Right.
Whatever we decide, whatever you guys decide tonight,
okay.
I will adjust the presentation to match that. That's part of the documentation. So don't worry about that. You do what you'd like to do on the numbers. That's the important thing.
I think the only question for Brenda is if there's a change to what went out for the public hearing, we can amend what's posted right now and date it if there's any change at all in what's in the already been published.
We haven't put anything out for the public hearing yet. It would be tomorrow. Right? It would be next week.
Yeah. Okay. All right. All right. That's why I was kind of trying to get some head shakes tonight so we knew what to put out in the packet. This doesn't mean we still couldn't change something at the last meeting or even at the public hearing. This is just something that we're putting out to say, here's a scenario that we're looking at right now. So the public has something to look at and comment on.
It would be better to have
some numbers very close to what we're looking at, and not especially we don't want to raise any numbers that go out to the public.
1 to 3.5 in the future years, but again, that's future. It's the current year we're going to be adopting in a 3-year process.
The one in the packet's at 10, 10, 10, and then 2.5. That is, for all intents and purposes, this exact same
scenario.
Just it is minor adjustments. And that's fully expected. I fully expected to then whatever you guys decided to then update that. So it's no big deal. I'm not worried about it. And it's not a germane. I mean, the end result is not we're, well, here. 2025, we're at 3162 here.
Compared to 25.
And 3-year equal, which is, I think, the one that was in there. So it's 40 cents difference.
Yeah. So Councilmember Oglesby here, I am in favor of the 15, 10, 5, and then 3% all the way through. I would be comfortable. I really like Councilmember Page says, if we're going to deliver news, let's deliver it and then take it down. That's my personal, and we can always change it. But I think residents need to know that we are looking at the larger picture here, the larger future, the many years in the future, in what, 2028? We are making things happen now to benefit the residents in the future and our capital. And so they have to understand that this might seem like people say, like Wisnowski said, you know, what's the dollar amount that's actually monthly is coming out of your bills compared in the next 3 years compared to what's going to happen in 2023 when it goes to 3%, if that's what we council decides, the long-term benefit of our residents is what's the the purpose of this meeting and the goal of what we're going forward to. So that's my 2 cents on the rate increase. Passing on.
You know, and I also think that Councilmember Page has a good point, right? By going with the projected 3%, right, we don't have to come back in a couple of years if our expenses have gone up or something and say, hey, you know, we told you it was going to be 2.5, but it's actually going to be 3. And I think the story we can give, which is a good financial stewardship story, right, is that we are looking at the cost of living adjustments, right, the annual COLA of the 2.5%, but we're also trying to put money away for a rainy day. Right, you can't run a city with no money for a rainy day, because those rainy days do come, as much as we all don't want them to. Things break, right? So, exactly. So, or if growth slows, or something, the economy slows down, something, right? So, and we can always adjust down, right? So, if the cost of living jumps down to 1% or 1.5% or something, right, then we can always bring it down if we see that. So I think it's good financial stewardship to think that long-term plan and try to, you know, help us build for those rainy days. Because as we found, right, we can use those funds, like we made the loan to the police department, right, it's things someday that loan may not be to the police department, but it may be to replace a sewer line somewhere, right? So, yeah, or a water tank, you know, get a tree in the side of it or something, right? Not, you know, there's no wood, but yeah. So, right,
Yep.
We have our utilities. We have to take care of it.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so do we want to go ahead and look at just briefly the water and the stormwater to see how those rates we did pass a few years ago look?
Okay. So let's stick with importance here. So we'll go to water. So the basic format's the same. Here's our checking account. Here's our capital. We were making money. You guys were doing so well in the water fund. And what we have here is, where are you, sweetie?
You had it in yellow.
Ah, yeah, I should have.
I think it was highlighted.
There it is. Tacoma base fee for purchase capacity. That's next year, and then it will settle in at its annual amount. We built in a cost of, inflation because these regional charges are not are not isolated. Although I will say, I would check because the capacity charge is based on capital, should be based on capital alone. And they're when I do capital plans, I do based on projected inflated costs, which a GFC is based on. We do projected, which is why GFCs done that way do not have a cost of living factor. You should be a little more isolated. Connection charge. When you plan on capital costs and you inflate them out, if I were to say, if a couple years from now, if we're back looking at the capital, then you've got a $200,000 pump station in 5 years. Well, and Seth says it's $200,000. Well, when it shows up in 5 years, it's going to be another 14-15% because I'm going to build in 2.5% cost of inflation because materials are going to go up. So if we base rates on that, then I shouldn't be in the meantime giving you a cost of living on that rate as well. It's a minor point, but the really important thing here is this came out of the blue, and even though it's going to take away, and like I said, your water fund was nicely balanced. It was healthy. It was perking along. You were putting away a nice capital, and that just got sucked up. What we are relying on here are two things, the growth coming in and the fact that your debt, which is pretty sizable for your size, not size, well, it's about where the norm is. 20-30% of your bill going to debt is not unusual, but it's going away. And so that's why we're willing. We love your reserves. This is your water's fine on a reserve balance from a long-term capital standpoint because you don't have that capacity that we're taking away. We'd like to see a building not going away, but we see what we're going to do is we're just going to suck it to take this, but we're going to rebound so quickly when that goes away. That I'm willing to, no, that's not, there's nothing to write home to mom about, but 250, and that's probably a little low. May's going to get worried, because remember, you're going to want 100 grand in the operating fund and water, too, so you do not have a lot of reserves sitting here. We're doing so much on sewer. And if growth comes in, this will stabilize, and then we will quickly bounce back and restore that. So I can absorb that. I'm willing to, as a professional, as a cash flow balance standpoint, I'm willing to run that risk.
Hey, Seth, are you turning the spigot on Tacoma Water next year?
They're just charging us.
Potentially.
Or they're just charging us.
No, this is a new charge from Tacoma. Typically, on all their wholesale customers previously, they have only billed for the water that we have taken on a commodity charge. So if we have a $13 million asset, or we bought this capacity, and it hasn't cost us anything to have that on the shelf, They're not covering their costs of depreciation from us if we're not using any water. And it's just like we charge people, whether they use water or not, we charge a base fee. And that's what this is. This is a base fee to cover at least a portion of their fixed costs of so that when we want to turn on the spigot, actually water comes out, so that they've got to maintain it and preserve and have that asset ready to produce water when we need it. So it's fair. It's a reasonable thing to charge. What was nice is that we didn't have to pay anything for 20 years. But those days are over, and so we need to be able. What they did when they set this was they wanted to make it balanced, so they lowered their commodity rate and added the base fee. So the water is a little cheaper to buy, but there's a base fee. So it was, they did it for several reasons. One is to encourage people to take water, but also to equity between some of their users. If some of their wholesale customers are using a substantial amount of water and shouldering a lot of the burden, then, and some people are just saving that and using, not using it, but setting it aside for the future, but there's no carrying cost. That wasn't quite fair.
It's exactly what we would be doing if you had snowbirds. If you have a transient population that's only in your water utility for 6 months out of the year, and you start thinking about them, it's like, well, we're charging all this base charge and then a volume charge. We're getting so much money from the people that live here every year. But this guy, he pays nothing when he leaves. And so you would start adjusting the base charge up and bringing in compensating by taking the volume. That's exactly what Tacoma did.
Can you show what the scenario would be, and I'm not going to rely on it, but at the growth of 125?
This has the growth.
For each of the next 3 years. I believe it has 125 for the first year only.
Okay, so let's look at, now you're not as robust here as sewer, but if we, and I got that, I don't know how I carried through there.
Okay. And just 125 for the first 3 years.
Okay. Shouldn't be that dramatic of a. We basically cut out a year of negative.
Thank you.
You're at now 346, and it was down around 200.
Yes. Yes. Now, from a standpoint, let's look at the overall. Just like we did in sewer. So if we look at this, so we're, as Seth pointed out, our bottom is 211, and corresponding to the same year we're at our maximum loss, and then we're starting to go positive. If we have another 10 per year, We bumped it 60 grand there. We basically made that a wash. So we basically climbed a whole year.
And that's at 10 units?
That's at 10 units.
Starting in year one?
At the 20 units, we gain a whole of the year.
Yeah.
And we're, in fact, even before the debt gets back, we're getting close to being back where. And you can see we've got no cost of living here. There's nothing going on. Now, conversely, what I'm less worried about more growth. If we take it, less than 10. We are, May is now starting to panic because of her operation. She has nothing in, she's okay in operations. She's got nothing in capital. Absolutely nothing.
We know there's a lot of capital costs.
For 3 years. So she is not a happy person.
Yeah.
And I don't blame her. Another 10 and corrective action is required.
Yeah. I think in 2 years, we'll need to come back and look at this fund and see how it really is. It growth affects this fund a little more because residents will use more water. You don't really use sewer as a resident. It's just a flat charge. So because of summer, hot, warm summers, you use and you get a lot more revenue from growth. So as, if growth does continue or even increase, that'll really help this fund. But there's a lot more capital expenditures in water, a lot more. And we are going to be updating the capital plan in the spring. The thing that water doesn't have is any inflationary increases whatsoever. That's something we definitely would want to look at if we look at water rates in the future, is to adding one. We have one in storm. We're going to have one in sewer, but right now we have none in water. And I'm not suggesting we do that because we're here tonight just to get sewer whole, but in the future that's something we need to look at. We do have two big capital or several capital projects we're going to be that are on this fund. If you see the capital down there, we're going to be spending down some of our capital on some of the projects that Seth already has in the capital plan in the budget. And so those will be done, but we've got to really, there's still a lot of need out there. So when we update capital, we'll come back to you on this.
So we just threw in what a cost of living, just so you can see the power.
At 3%, so if we increase 3% in our water, there you go.
And I guess I'd throw it out to the council, just I'm curious to the council's members' feelings about, to me, if we're putting in an inflation, a long-term inflation for the sewer part, we already have an inflationary factor for the stormwater. It would seem to me to be a logical discussion to our residents to say, we're putting this across, we have an inflationary part now amongst all three of these funds, and we won't have to address that again. So I'm just curious to the rest of the council members' opinions.
I think a gradual approach is helpful to the residents. These are numbers on a chart, on a page, but we're talking about people's pocketbooks. And it may not seem like a big deal to pay, you know, a $65 water bill, but when you have a water bill and then you have your sewer charges and you have your stormwater charges and, you know, all the little bits and pieces, pretty soon you're paying a $110 or $15 or $20 bill. And when that increases by $3 or $5, I mean, on the paper, it doesn't seem like that big a deal. But in somebody's pocketbook, and some of our residents might really struggle with that additional charge. So I think really a moderate approach that will keep the city clear, and you know, we don't want to pad any of these funds at all at the expense of the residents. We certainly don't want to, you know, be digging out of a hole. That doesn't make sense either. But I think it is a gradual approach is better for the residents. I don't know. Maybe maybe someone else has other opinions about it.
I would, in conjunction with what you just said, because everything you said was true, the water fund is a little different in that it's more sensitive to growth and we have the debt coming off. So whereas the sewer, that wasn't going to change. Nothing. That cost of living was going to be needed whether the growth occurs or not, because you're just not building reserves there. This one has a possibility if, now we don't know what capital is coming, and that is a wild card. But it's possible that with growth being a little bit better, that in 2 or 3 years you may look at this fund and have a different look at, it may be where implementing the cost of living is the only thing you have to do. I can't guarantee you a cost of living here is going to do the trick in the next, because you got, you're going to have capital costs in the next 5 years that are going to occur before that debt comes off. And that's going to be a change that I just don't know how to factor in. I like the approach that the city has done in that they tackled the utility. They've concentrated on one utility and brought it back to health. And then, okay, temper this, give it a year or two so that everybody's back to normal again. And then, okay, you've now done, you did it with the water fund, you're doing it with the sewer, you did it with the storm. We know because of the change with the Tacoma and the capital coming up, that there's going to be an adjustment. It could be anywhere from cost of living. It may require a bump, just like, in the first couple of years to handle that capital problem. So this one, to me, is a lot more eligible to be thought of as, listen, there's just too much going on. I'm not sure we have as much information. We're sure you're going to have a lot more information. I don't see anything changing dramatically in the sewer. Not on the capital side. I think you're going to be robust enough in the sewer to account, handle that. The water, I just don't think, I'm just not sure. So, keep that in mind. Even if you were to take a cost of living approach now and do that, you may be coming back in 2 years and saying, it's not enough. We got short-term problems here.
So anyway, I was just thinking that raising two of these funds at one time sometimes is really negative. I mean, we've done it in the past, but because we're going to come back and review all of these funds again in a couple of years, it might be a good idea trying not to pile everything on. I mean, I think 3% is a great idea or some kind of cost of living, but I think that for the next 2 years, we're going to be okay. So it would be good to just come back in a couple of years and look at it and see if we want to do a cost of living or some other kind of adjustment. Do you think our water service is going to survive that, Seth?
Yeah, I think we'll be fine. One other thing that has boosted our revenue recently is the amount of irrigation. Because on irrigation meters that go into the higher cost tiers, we're getting paid at the highest commodity rate for the irrigation water. So those landscaped areas, the parks out in the 10 trails, they have pretty hefty water bills. So that is also one other thing that's boosting our revenue.
So, Councilmember Deedy, so I'm good with leaving the water fund as is for now and looking at it in a couple more years. We do have quite a bit of growth outside of 10 trails coming. We've got 169. We've got some apartments coming down in Lake Sawyer. We've got things coming along. So leaving it at that. And I'm okay with, on the sewer, bringing it up to the 3% like Stephen, Councilmember Page stated. I'm okay with that. I just like to leave the water fund as is now and just come back in a couple of years, year and a half, 2 years, and look at that.
Can you explain the dependencies on growth between the two funds? You explained the water is
more susceptible to the.
It's just, why is that?
Because we're running negative over the next few years. No, we're drawing down our reserves such that we're getting to, this is with the growth, and we're down to $200,000. That's the bare minimum. She wants that for operations. Right, so right. We basically have nothing. And the sewer fund with those changes was growing. So we were now positive on the revenue. So when we sucked away the growth, we just brought that back. And you saw we had to go back twofold, lose 20, before we started going negative on the operational revenues of sewer. This one we're already negative. So it's just, we're just on more of a razor's edge on water.
Also, in the sewer fund, you have one fixed monthly charge of $21.78. In the water fund, you have a base charge, and then you have a capacity charge. So in the summers, you use more. Now he's pointing out irrigation. We have hydrant water now, which we never had before. So we have other revenue sources. We also have higher capital facility charges for the infill, so the fund itself has more robust and different ways to grow their revenue just with growth.
And as along with what you said, you're susceptible on water to down years. Financial analysts, the rate study goal is last boom year we had was 12 or 13 years ago when we had the water shortages. And so revenues went to, a bunch of city revenues went to, went to hell in a handbasket. And so they were doing rate studies. And, you know, you're probably, oh, I dare say a sizable portion of your revenue, probably 15-20% is on the high summer water usage. Just that, that real hot weather usage, and that, that's ephemeral. This is the Pacific Northwest.
What I wanted to mention is that once that debt retires, you have the growth and the debt retirement. You've got this temporary dip, but then the fund gets healthy pretty quick, as you mentioned. So if you added too much of increases early, then you may end up finding that, oh, maybe yes, we're collecting too much money in the out years. So maybe it does seem reasonable to, okay, maybe we just, maybe we can delay a capital project or something to just kind of help that get past that this 2022-2023 low point. There's other things we can do to so that we're not increasing rates and then dropping them later. Just try and keep it even.
Yes, and if we were talking about doing trying to balance the books, that's exactly the discussion we'd be having. Is no, you see that we're totally, when we restore the balance up front, as soon as we get past that debt with the growth and stuff, it's just like all of a sudden the public is going to start, what the heck are you doing? Why are you taking this much money? So there's, you've got those twin things happening, and we're a little bit, which is why we're here, and we're making sure you're cognizant of this and why we're going to keep an eye on it. We've got this five year here until that debt comes off where things are going to get dicey. But Seth is so true. Until we get close enough to where that debt's coming off, we get within a couple of years, and then we can say, okay, no matter what happens, we're going to be okay. We got X amount in the bank. We're going to be okay. At that point, now you can do a long-term, like we did on sewer, and say, okay, this is what it's going to take, and everybody's going to be happy, and it's going to smooth out. We're not growing reserves by huge amounts and this sort of stuff. So there's a sweet spot. It's coming up. We're a little premature.
Okay, so we want to move on to stormwater. We used all the same growth and assumptions, inflation and everything on all three funds. And this has our last year rate increase in here. And then right now, on page 12, where we show the model, like I said, this year it's 2.7, but that's 50 cents a person a month. And if you look, if we go with inflation, that's about 50 cents a month each month, each year thereafter. So right now it's looking okay. We have to really look at capital and see how that fund will look in the future. It's a variable inflation. What I would say in 2 years, we need to probably pick a fixed inflation.
Go ahead.
Seth, what would the stormwater connection charge look like? What would that, what's that cost if we implemented one?
Are you jumping ahead of the presentation? You were that one. You were that kid in school, weren't you? You just couldn't?
To charge a, say, capital facility charge, we need to have, what is the asset that you're buying capacity in? Remember, about half of our budget is meeting stormwater discharge permit requirements, not necessarily repairing or an asset. We have many of our customers that are in areas where they infiltrate their own stormwater, and so they're not really connected to anything. It's our system is a series of culverts. There are some longer continuous conveyances, but there isn't like one large stormwater system that discharges to treatment facilities. Now, we're beginning to build a few treatment facilities here and there. So if there was a developer and you were going to charge a capital facility charge, they would say, well, what do I get for the, what is the asset I'm getting capacity in? What am I, are you going to do the treatment for me and the conveyance? All I got to do is connect the pipe. Now, typically they're building their own facilities, the local detention ponds and treatment. Now there may be still a pipe that carries it away. But so it's a little more difficult to get to an equitable capital facility charge with stormwater. Now, there are some things I have thought about that perhaps we could fund. Like if we wanted to do a basin study, stormwater basin study, that would, say, benefit all developers, that would be something that you could fund, maybe with a capital facility charge. And a basin, Department of Ecology would allow you to study your basin. What's the runoff characteristics? Do you really need to detain these enormous amounts of water that they now require on the current manual? In so many cases, no. There's a lot of places where they don't require any detention because most of it, say, it drains to Lake Washington. Well, it has such a large stormwater attenuation, there's no need to put in these great big ponds. So there's some places, if you're discharging to Columbia River, some big, large outfall. The Lake Sawyer and the Rock Creek Swamp area is very large. And so that's a basin study. And you, there would be other benefits that you could look at. What could we do to make better use of those natural facilities? So that might be something that we could fund through a capital facility charge.
Now I'm going to get my 2 cents in worth. Stormwater is getting worse and worse. It's the wrong way of putting it. It's getting more important. More important, the costs are going up and up and up. You've got a stormwater utility. Capital facility charges are fair game as running a utility. It is a source of money that you only get one shot at. So after this growth happens, you're not going to collect anything off of it. He's perfectly right, and it's been a major bone of contention. Every client I've worked with has this problem with especially commercials. Well, they're installing their own local retention detention, so therefore, what are they buying into? My eyes, it's an old school way of looking at it, because the reason why we've gotten strict about stormwater, it's not flow control anymore. It's the pollution that goes along with. There could be 1 gallon of water that we got to control. It's because of the, and it's primarily because of automotive usage and what's coming off of rooftops, chemicals, and lawns, and so forth. That aspect is a public nature aspect. It's the community as a whole. I as a resident, it doesn't matter where I am, if I'm a business or a residence, I'm driving to and from that. And the reason
I'm on those roads. I'm leaving. It's where our tires go. That's why we replace our tires. We leave a little bit of tire. The studies show that the worst pollution to our roads is at stop signs, when the cars actually stop, and so things start dripping. You ever been in a parking lot at a, you know, at a shopping store when it hasn't rained for a while? When it rains, it is slick as, it's like an ice sheet. This is why we have stormwater control now. And it's going to happen because it's the only way that makes sense. It's the only way you can get around this commercial problem from a rate chance standpoint and also a capital facility charge, is by saying, listen, our stormwater utility has two functions. It is flow control and it is pollution control. And, yes, we can credit you for flow control, for on-site mitigation, and the fact that you're in a swale, you're a natural, you've got natural barriers, or you've got a huge buffer zone around you for whatever reason. I'm not going to charge you, you know, the full rate per impervious surface area. But I'm sorry, McDonald's, you've got 1,000 customers a day driving through there. Where do you think this pollution's coming from? Why do you think we have, and the majority of your operational costs are related to this. Now, that doesn't get into your capital, but that approach allows you, with a straight face, to justify a commercial charge. And this is always problematic.
A connection charge?
Both an operational charge, monthly, because that's where the big problem is. We've got Gig Harbor, for example. Home Depot pays one residential ERU equivalent of a monthly, because they have complete containment. They've got their own facilities. And they came to the city and said, what are we paying for? Well, under a flow control model, they're not paying for anything. That's what they said. You got this whole flow control. We're not contributing one inch to it. When you look at it from a pollution control, then that changes. It's not 100%, but from my looking, I would look at it from the capital facilities as anything that's going to controlling and delaying and holding this water is doing two things. It's flow control and it's allowing those pollutants to not go into bodies of waters. And I don't know whether it would be a policy decision. I don't think it's a straight engineering decision, but I at some point I'm going to start recognizing my client that the city council's just say, listen, we are going to decide that 50% of the system is related to pollution and 50% that, and then you can take all those capital costs and take half of them and then say, okay, you're buying into this system. You're contributing. You put in the commercial business. You're a new resident. You're using the cars. This is what you're buying into, guys. It doesn't have to be right in front of your street. It's the system as a whole that we're protecting, the environment, not just your square section.
And with you, Cap, or Oglesby here, like, who am I? So, like he just said, I mean, I think about, like, when you think about larger commercials coming in and more residents using them, more cars on the roads, also thinking about what it's going to take to fill those commercial things, those trucks, those deliveries, those food, the things that are filling those commercial buildings for us residents to go get it. There's extra pollution with those big vehicles coming in as well. So, I mean, that's a very interesting scenario for
this possibility, this capital charge, and it wouldn't be huge, but you know, getting a $250, $400, $500 capital facility charge associated with stormwater is going to set you up. It's going to take the rates out of the capital side of this equation for probably forever, at least for the next short term, because you've got this growth going on. But once it goes by, it's done. It's never going to come back again. And if you have $1 million worth of culverts and that sort of stuff, then you know they're buying into something. Somebody paid for that.
Yeah. So this is a pretty big question. I think probably we'll have to have more discussion on this in the future. And if we want to look at this model, I did want to throw one more thing. I know when I worked in the city of Kent, we charged the state for stormwater charge for their roads.
State roads, yes.
Yes, and we got quite a bit of money for it, and I know other cities do that also. So there's other ideas out there, too, but I think we can't solve all the problems tonight. Maybe we ought to finish this one up.
I'm just giving you a heads up. That's something that... So stormwater, you can see, you balance things out. We're running along, and from a sensitivity standpoint, it's just not the end of the world.
Where do you have?
You got cost of living in here too.
Yeah, so.
But you don't have a cost. Oh, they, good.
Yeah, put that back. Yes, it was.
So with the two, with your loss there, you're still.
All right, now I feel better.
Well, it was 2.7.
It was 2.7. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And we're. Ooh.
Not 4.5. Ah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
2.7
and then 2.3.
We've been very lucky in this fund to get grants to fund some of the projects also. So that's helped us not need so much for capital. We're going to be updating the plan and looking at that. But this is an area where there's been more emphasis in the state and more grants available to help us in these areas.
Okay, so.
Seth, has these projections taken into account the expected commercial growth on 169 and other areas that.
This just has a 100 ERU growth programmed in per year.
We don't have any commercial.
So it's just, right now it's just dealing with the residential.
You can see that we've dropped it to half, less than half, and you're still okay with those annual cost of livings. So that's why I say this one's really.
I believe one conservancy that we put in there is that we, in the out years, we did not count on continuing support from Department of Ecology at $50,000 every 2 years. So we put it in for the near term, but we're not sure that we can count on that going forward.
But it looks good. You should be just hunky-dory in storm for quite a few years.
Yeah. We did increase the street sweeping because we know with the new developments and all that, so we built quite a bit more street sweeping in the future years.
Okay. So I gotta say, I mean, I think I've been consistent all along. You guys have done very well. This should be, I mean, this really is a success story, you guys. Your costs, you're a little unusual because of the Tacoma capacity and the King County Metro. That doesn't make you odd in this area, but those are costs that are out of your control. But your staffing and your admin costs and everything, they're as basic as they can be. So you're charging for your local facilities and so forth is right in line. You're not out of whack with anything. And, I mean, this is, you know, the percentage is a little scary on sewer, but not cost-wise. And the fact that you're not going to do on anything on sewer and not in storm for a couple of years, combined with just reasonable increments in sewer, really, I mean, this is nothing to be, you know, lower our heads at. I mean, you guys did a very good job, and you're, like I said, you're leveraging growth. I don't think you went too far, and I don't think you skimped too little. I think you kind of hit a nice groove there. So, well done. As I said, the capital is the only thing that, this is the wild card. And as Seth said, there's a lot of ways, not a lot of ways, but, you know, it's a timing thing, really. That's the, and you can make do. You've got some adjustment room there, but you need to know that. That's kind of the only thing that's lying out in the horizon. But other than that, you should be okay for quite a while.
Good job.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's it.
I move that we adjourn.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Meeting adjourned.